Okay, Tov, welcome back to another in our ongoing series of Shirim on Daf Yomi. We are now in the middle of a sugyan, Ketubot Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, in the middle of a discussion of the relative value of particular chazakot and how they play out and establish burden of proof. And picking up off of our Mishnah, which establishes that if mumim were found on a woman while she was still in her father's house, then it's the father's burden of proof to demonstrate that those mumin came after Erusin, otherwise the ketubah is forfeited. And if she, the mumin are discovered after she is already in the husband's house, then the husband has the burden of proof to demonstrate those mumin pre-existed kiddushin, and otherwise he will have to pay the ketubah. So we pick up from that with a statement of Shmuel. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Remember that it's Rav Yehuda reporting the name of Shmuel. Hamachlif para b'chamor. So, if person A, owns an ox, and person B owns a donkey, and they agree to swap, then the kinyan is effectively made when the first item is pulled into the second person's reshut. Immediately, the second item becomes the property of the first person. That's a Mishnah in Kiddushin. So now, the ox owner we're calling O, and the donkey owner we're calling D. The donkey is somewhere else, and we go to the corral, and D pulls the ox, and at that exact moment, O becomes the owner of the donkey. Now, machlif par b'chamor, mashach bala chamor ata para. So D pulled the ox and made a kinyan on him. V'loy speak bala para mashach ata chamor at shemei ata chamor. And then O goes to the barn and he finds that the donkey is dead. Al bala chamor la viraya shayach chamoro kaya mishat mishicha. It is the responsibility of D, the owner of the donkey, to prove that his donkey was alive at the time that he acquired the ox, and therefore the donkey became the other fellow's. Otherwise, he's going to have to return the ox or return the money. Now, Vitana Tuna Kala. Shmuel added on to this that the Tana brings support for this ruling from our ruling of Kala. The Gemara immediately asks, Hey Kala, which ruling about the Kala? Remember, we've got two in our Mishnah. If you want to argue that it's the first clause, which is the kala when she's in her father's house, midami, that the cases are not parallel. Hata maiti avraya umapik. In our case, if the father brings proof that the mumim post-dated kiddushin, he brings proof and he extracts money from the baal, the ktubah. Hacha maiti balacham raya umokim. In the index case that Shmuel is talking about, the owner of the donkey, D, brings proof that his donkey was alive and keeps money. He doesn't pay. So in other words, the cases are not parallel because in our case, the money is being removed from its owner. And in the index case, money is remaining with its owner. He is exempt from paying. So now, Amaravi Abba, Kala Bavet Chamiya, must be the second clause, with the Kala in her father-in-law's or in her husband's house. In which case, unless the husband can bring proof that the mumim predated kiddushin, he'll have to pay the ketubah. All right. So again, if the husband brings the proof, he gets to keep the money. Parallel to here. Vakati lo dami, but it's still not the same. Why? Hatam bal maiti rayu mara lechezke de'av. In the case of marriage, the husband brings proof against chezkat haguf, indicating that the mumim are earlier, not later. Hacha bal chamar maiti rayu mokim chezke biyadei. Here, the donkey owner comes and brings proof that supports chezkat haguf, that the animal was alive until the last minute. That's what chezkat haguf is. Things remain the same until the last minute. So that means that neither case in our Mishnah could be supportive of that ruling. Rav Nachman Yitzchak explains as follows, that it is referring to the case of kala b'veit aviha, the first clause, but not for purposes of the ketubah, for purposes of kiddushin. Meaning that if the guy gave the girl kiddushin, he gave her $100 ring, whatever it is. Now, the guy turns around and said, hey, you had mumim, I want the kiddushin back. If the father can bring proof that the mumim came later, so he will be able to keep the kiddushin, exact and support, and so that is very much like the case of the chamor, where his testimony supports the chazaka and allows him to keep money. Now, parenthetically, Nachman Yitzchak says, don't think that this is subject to the machlokan above Abatra about kiddushin lav letivui nitnu, whether or not the person can claim kiddushin back when the marriage has been dissolved. that the father or the girl can claim the kedushin back. Don't think that this is only according to the opinion that says that he can't claim them. Even according to the opinion that says that kedushin, the kedushin can be claimed by the father. In other words, when a husband divorces, that the father can claim, the husband divorces from Na'irus, and the father can still claim that he wants to keep the Kiddushin. Hanimili Kiddushin Vadai. But even according to the one who says Kiddushin Latibuin Ninu, that is only when there's Kiddushin Vadai, when there's for sure Kiddushin, and then the guy divorces her, so the father can claim, I'm keeping the Kiddushin. Ava Kiddushin Ta'ut, but here we have a case where the Kiddushin may never have existed. Therefore, imaiti raya in ilolo. So Nachman Yitzchak says, even in such a case, only if the father brings proof that the mumim came afterwards, does he keep the kedushin. It's not automatic that he keeps the kedushin. A man is makadish a girl on condition. I'll tonight that she doesn't have mumim, and then or he's makadish a girl stam, but the assumption is no mumim. Turns out she has mumim. Yeah, he has to give her a get. Yeah, he doesn't pay the ketubah, but also he should get the kedushin back. So therefore, the father has to bring a raya that the mumi happened later, in which case she gets the ketubah and he gets to keep the kiddushin. So from the perspective of kiddushin, it's very much like the case of the chamor. Now, meitave, we have a challenge against this. This is now in the halacha of treifot. And remember, the issue of treifot is that if you have an animal that was a treifa before you shechted it, you can't eat it. If, on the other hand, after you shechted it, something fell in that would makes it look like it was diseased, that doesn't change anything. It was a healthy animal when you killed it. So, of course, we're going to now, as you can anticipate, deal with a case of safek. And here's the deal. Normally, a butcher buys an animal from the rancher, and then he shechts it. On some occasions, he may not buy it until after he shechted it and has sold the meat. So let's watch. If there's a needle that's found inside the second stomach, if it's only sticking out of one side, then kshera. Both sides, then it's trefa. Now, if there's some coagulated blood on top of it, or a drop of blood, then you know that this wound predated shechita. So these are signs that you could tell whether or not the wound was pre-mortem or post-mortem. All right. If the wound has coagulated, then you know that it happened at least 3 days before shechita. It takes that long to seal up. However, let's say it's not sealed up. You don't know. It might have happened more recently than 3 days before shechita, but before shechita, in which case it's a treifa. It might have happened after shechita, in which case it's okay. Now, what do we say? That the one who wants to extricate money has to prove that the wound really was problematic. Now, let's see what problematic means. If the butcher already paid and now he's coming to the rancher and says, I want my money back, what he's going to have to do is he's going to have to prove that the wound happened beforehand. Because it's a fake. We can't tell when the wound happened. He'll have to prove that the wound happened beforehand. Okay, now, v'iyahiv tavach dami, but if the butcher already paid, then barley tori rayu mapik, then he has to bring proof and get the money out of the guy. V'amai, why do we say that? Baal behema leiti rayu menokim, why don't we say, based on the Shmuel's case, that the owner of the animal, the rancher, should be the one to say, should be the one who has the obligation to prove that the wound came later, just like the Baal HaChamor has to prove that the donkey died later, so why don't we assume chezkat haguf, which is that the animal was healthy. So why don't we say that the assumption is that the wound was earlier, and that the Baal Behem has to prove that it happened later, and that he sold a good animal to the guy. So the answer is b'dolo yayiv tabchatami. Dami. That this statement on Motzer Chalavraya is talking about a case where the butcher did not pay. If the butcher did not pay, then really what's happening is that the owner of the animal has to bring the Ra'ya. He's the Motzer Chalavraya. And that, of course, fits here because he's the one who has to prove that the animal was a healthy animal when he handed him over. All right? Just like the Baal HaChamor has to prove that it was a healthy chamor when it was swapped. Okay? So now, my psaka, how can you determine arbitrarily that it's a case where the tabach didn't pay? Ela ki atar rechez kalamar, we just saw this recently, that Rav Yehuda's brother, Rami, maintained that his brother did not have all the best traditions about Shmuel. In other words, he didn't have the best transmission. Don't accept all of the traditions that my brother Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel. I'll tell you what Shmuel really said. Now go back to the Chamor case. Kol shenolad safek birshuto, alav haraya. General rule. If it's in whoever's domain, the safek was discovered, that's the one who has to bring the proof that it's not to his fault. Otherwise, the assumption is it's to his fault. Now, v'tana tuna kala, and that's where Shmuel said he gets support from our mission of kala, and there we go. That's why, as Rava said earlier, that's why if the mumim were discovered when she was in the father's house, the father has to bring the proof that they were later. If the mumim were discovered in the husband's house, he has to bring proof that they really happened before Kiddushin. Good. Now, Meitave, so then we bring a challenge against this. Machachin said, Bobin, Ekosot, etc. That whole case that we had just had with the Trefa. Vidaloyoiv Tabach Tami, but if the Tabach didn't pay, then Baal Behema, Baali to Uriah, Umapik, then that means that in order for the rancher to get his money, he has to bring proof that the wound happened later. Viamai, Sveke Rishu Tabach Echelid. After all, according to Shmuel's last ruling that we just recorded, it's wherever the location of the safek or it was discovered, that's the one who has to bring proof that he is not at fault. So then, therefore, since we discovered this after killing it, which means it's in the reshut of the butcher should have to bring the, should be the one who has to prove that the wound was earlier. Why should the owner of the animal have to prove that it's earlier? The answer is, Diyayiv Tabach Dami. You're right. We're talking about a case where the butcher did pay, and he's the one who really has to prove that it was earlier. Which now fits perfectly, because Nolad Safek Birshuto, the Safek was discovered in his Rashut. So, my Psaka, how can you arbitrarily say that it's a case where the Tabach did pay, in inverse of the earlier question? The answer is, Stama de Milta, Kamar lo yoyevinish tzuzi, lo yoyevinish chiyuta. The normal case is that a person doesn't hand something over without getting the money, which means the rancher normally will not hand over the animal unless he got paid for it. So therefore, the default case that we can rely on is where the rancher got paid. Therefore, the butcher wants to get his money back. Therefore, he's the one who has the burden of proof to demonstrate that the trefa happened before, because it nolad safek birshuto, and then it works out fine. Now, the end of the Mishnah said, Chacham omrim, b'med dvar memorim, mumin shebeseiter. Chacham disagreed with Reb Meir. If you recall from yesterday's podcast in the Mishnah, Reb Meir said, basically presented the entire Mishnah, Chacham disagreed and said that the husband has no claim against mumim that are exposed. Mumim that are not exposed, he has a claim, and that's of course only if there's no bathhouse in the city, in which case he has no claim whatsoever. So Amar Rav Nachman, Nichpe mukimun shebeseiter dami. If a woman is epileptic, that's called mumin shebeseiter. There's no way he could have known. But that's only if she has some sort of a schedule that she knows when she has these fits. And therefore, she avoids everybody and she stays in a room at that time. Aval, lo kvialei, but if in a normal case where a person can't predict when they're going to have a seizure, kumumin shibagalui dami, then it's like a public thing because on occasion she has these seizures and they're in public. She can't time them to stay away from people at the time. So therefore we consider it public and therefore Chachamim would agree, would claim that even without a bathhouse in town, that's a mum that the husband certainly knew about and accepted and he has no claim. Okay, the next Mishnah is about a man's mumin. Ha'ish shenoldu bo mumin. Let's say a man develops mumin, and that word noldu is subject to dispute, as we'll see. Ein kofino tolotzi. The Beit Din does not force him to divorce the woman. Rosh Gamliel makes a distinction. He says, little mumin, and we'll see what those are. That's where it's true. Of a mumin hagdolim, but big mumin, significant mumin, kofino tolotzi. Then we force him to divorce. Now, Rav Yehuda Tani Noldu. Rav Yehuda learned our Mishnah the way that we read it, which means the word is Noldu, which means they developed, mumin that happened after they're married. Chia Barav Tani Hayu. Rav's son has a different girsa. In his Mishnah he says, Ha'ish Hayu Bo Mumin, a man who had mumin, which means he had them before. Now, Man Damar Noldu Kol Shekein Hayu. So Rav Yehuda will certainly agree that if he had the mumin before, then he doesn't have to divorce her, because she saw them, the Kasavra Kibla, she saw them, she accepted them, and she lived with them. Mandam Rahayu, but according to Achia Barav, Mumim that he had before, Aval Nodulo, but if he developed Mumim later, maybe we would claim that we do force the husband, because she had no idea what she was getting into, it happened later. Now, Tan Rishon Gamliel, and Vamorim Mumim Maktanim. Remember, at the end of our Mishnah, Rishon Gamliel qualifies this and says, that's only with small Mumim. If they're big mumim, we force him to divorce her. Now, Bishlamal Laman Dama Noldu. That works well according to Rav Yehuda, who read that the case is Noldu. Nu Mumim. In which case, Hanu Shanim and Gdol Mektanim. Therefore, we understand why we distinguish between big ones and small ones. In other words, a husband's perfectly fit and healthy, and then later on in the marriage, he develops some small Mum. All right, so we say that's something that she should learn to live with. We can't force her to divorce, but a big Mum, all right, she can't handle it. But Lamandamar Hayu, but according to Chiya Barav, who says that the girsa of the Mishnah is Hayu, which means we're talking about Mumim that the man had before he married her, Malik Dolim, Malik Tanim, what do I care if they're big or small? Either way, Asav V'Kibla, she knew about them and she accepted them. All right, the answer is Kisvurahi, she Yechola L'Kabel, V'Chshav Inu Yechola L'Kabel. No, perhaps that's not the case. Perhaps she saw these Mumim and she said, I thought I could live with them, but I can't. So Mumim Tanim, we say, look, learn to live with them. Big ones, all right, we understand that you thought you could live with it, and now you can't. Which means we have not yet determined what the proper girsa in the Mishnah is, whether it's Noldu or even, or Hayu. Now, Ve'eloin Mumim Gdolim, what are big Mumim? If he gets blinded, Nikta Ayado, or his hand is cut off, he's amputated, V'nishpura Raglo, his leg is broken. We assume here a leg being broken in a way that it's never going to heal. Now, that's, so you understand that Mumim Tanim is a skin lesion, something of that sort. He says the Halacha follows Rav Shimon Gamliel, which is that only Mumim Gdolim, in the case of Mumim Gdolim, we do force him to divorce. Rav Nachman, Halacha Kedivrei Chachamim. And Rav Nachman says, no, we follow Chachamim. Umiyam Rav Yochanan Hachi. Wait, since when did Rav Yochanan say that way? That Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, wherever Rabbi Shimon Gamliel issues a ruling in the Mishnah, the halacha follows him. Chutz me the famous three cases of Orev, Tzidon, Veraya Achrona. That if, except for the case of Orev, which is an Orev in a get pashit, that's at the end of Mabatra. Tzidon is mentioned in the seventh parak of Gittin. And Raya Chrona, is in Sanhedrin. All right. But, that means that we always follow Rav Shimon Gamliel when he expresses opinion in the Mishnah, except for those three cases. The answer is Amorai Ninu Valiba de Rabbi Yochanan. All right. What the pickup of the Gemara here is as follows. When Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying Halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he makes it sound as if that's something special. That's not the default case. But why should that be the case? Rabbi Yochanan said, Stam, whenever Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion is mentioned in the Mishnah, that's the Halacha, except for those three spectacular cases. So the answer is that Amorai Nino Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan. There's a machloket Amoraim within Rabbi Yochanan as to whether Rav Shimon Gamliel's word always carries the day, except for those three cases, or, like it appears here, that Rabbi Yochanan does not have an automatic rule, and therefore he has to come here and rule that we indeed decide in favor of Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Tov, we've completed till this Mishnah, and Mirza Hashem, in the next podcast, we will finish Perek Shvi. Everybody should have a wonderful day.